Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, as I said in the last segment, the reality is, 30 years ago in Pennsylvania, at least. Now, remember, California, New York, 30 years ago, college was still free. You go back to before Reagan, it was completely free. If you were a resident, you didn't pay for anything. They screwed that up, in huge ways. But here in Pennsylvania, the Commonwealth actually picked up 3/4 of the cost of tuition. 3/4. The student had to come up with 1/4 of it. Now it's completely the opposite. The Commonwealth picks up about 1/4 of it. The student picks up 3/4. And you wonder why we have the debt crisis we've got amongst the millennial and younger generations. And no wonder they're ticked. I would be too. If to get a degree, I got to go $80,000, $100,000 in debt. And then worse than that, you end up paying on it. Something bad happens, and you end up right back where you started from. It's insane what we've done to these kids just trying to do what? Get a decent job. Lead a decent life. Lead the American dream that we promised them if they got skin in the game that we'd give them. I'm here to share some thoughts on this because I've been following his reporting and his tweeting on this issue, an important one. I've asked Michael Cianetto to come talk with us. Michael is a labor and economic justice reporter at The Guardian. Michael, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on, Rick.
So, again, I go back to, my age, a little bit older. People, it was a much different environment for college debt. Now I feel sorry for someone who's going to college this year, 5 years ago, the amount of money that they're being saddled with and the predatory nature of the loans that they're getting. It's unconscionable in my view.
Yeah, it's really depressing to just hear from people of all ages, because you have parents that are trying to retire now and can't because they took out these parent plus loans, put their kids through schools, and they're stuck with $1,000 a month payments or more, and they can't afford to retire because of it. And some of the people I've talked to have had those experiences, ranging from people who have just gotten out of college who can't afford to pay them, and once they start getting a salary where they can afford to make payments, they look at their principal and all this interest is accrued, so that they're winding up paying 2 to 3 times more the actual amount of what they took out of the student loans. It's just a huge burden. It's preventing people from being able to buy homes, from being able to have kids. That's my personal experience, having graduated less than 10 years ago. And I think it's something that more and more people are coming out of college and realizing that this is issue, and it's only going to get worse. It's only getting worse because every time you look, every few months, the amount of college debt people owe, it's over 1.8 trillion now. Even just a few months ago with these pauses, it was 1.7 trillion. Last year it was 1.5 trillion. And that's from 2004. I think it was only, I think it was under 500 billion. So this amount of debt keeps ballooning, and most people can't pay it. Even before the pandemic, around 51% of people were in default, in forbearance, or were not making payments because they can't afford to. And with the prospect of the pause on federal student loan payments restarting at the end of January, a lot of people who had that relief for a year or two during the pandemic are kind of fearful now that they're going to be saddled with, a $300 a month payment or more, especially if their income has changed over the course of those 2 years.
Yeah, now one of the things that I looked at you and tweeted out that I thought was really interesting, was this person, you know, the original loan was like $70,000. They had paid like 90 and still owed like 160. And I'm going, how does that work? Explain the math and what happens to someone. Because look, I understand, hey, you lose a job, something comes up, maybe you get hit with a couple of penalties. I kind of get a little of that. I don't know how you start off with one amount, pay actually, you know, almost 1.5 times what you paid back, and then own more than double on the other side. I have no idea how you get to this. And oddly enough, a lot of the responses from people were like, no, this can't possibly be. There's this myth out there that student loans can only be for 10 years. There's a lot of nonsense that's out there that's not anywhere close to accurate. But I look at this and I'm going, how is it that you paid almost 150% of the loan and you owe 200% more? I don't get it.
Unfortunately, from a lot of people I talk to, it's not an anomaly. With this particular person, they're a lawyer in North Carolina. So they make a good amount of money now, but when they just got out of law school, they had that $72,000 in student loan debt and get breaking into the legal profession. They couldn't afford to make payments the first 2 years. And during that time, you know, interest rates for student loans are already pretty high just for federal loans. If you are taking out private loans, they're, you know, they average over 10%. And that can really accrue very, very, very quickly. And that's what happened. And now this woman is stuck with paying $1,300-$1,400 a month, and it's barely breaking into that principal. And all the while, the interest is getting added on to the principal, and the interest that's already accrued is adding on to that. And that kind of gets people stuck into a cycle of debt where they're either stuck paying this forever, or you know, left to, you know, figure out, you know, what to do, whether to go in forbearance and let it get worse. I've talked to people who have actually got to the point where their wages are being garnished. You know, people's social security checks are being garnished. In 2015, the Government Accountability Office did a study and they found 40,000 people were getting social security checks garnished. And those are people where, you know, when they were taking out loans, you know, unless they were taking out loans for their children, you know, like you were talking about before, the cost of tuition were negligible compared to the costs now and what the government was subsidizing. You know, per pupil in the late 80s, I think the federal and state government subsidies was around $8,000 per student. Now that's closer to $2,000 per student. So when more kids are going to college, the funding at the federal and state level really hasn't kept up with that. And you've seen a lot of cuts in higher education across the board. And that's why you see this rise in the use of adjunct professors who are barely getting enough money to make ends meet, and all these other issues, you know, going into the labor aspects of higher education.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Michael Cionato. He's a labor and economic justice reporter at The Guardian. If you got a question, comments, thoughts, something on your mind, give us a yell. 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. If you've got a student loan crisis on your hands. Is this the most egregious case that you've come across, though? I mean, I look at those numbers and it's just mind-blowing. But I had someone email me going, no, they're much worse. Is this the worst one you've seen?
No, honestly, I one of the worst cases where there's a mother and her husband who live in Worcester, and they're sick. You know, this woman just turned 65 years old. Their husband's 68, and then, you know, they're telling me we're gonna have to work until the day we die because we took out loans so our kids could go to college, and they're stuck with these Parent PLUS loans, paying $1,000 a month, and they're, you know, telling me we're barely making a dent in the principal, and the way it's going, we're going to have to pay until, you know, we pass away. We're going to be stuck with this debt forever. And I've talked with a lot of people like that. It's depressing, even people who are making, you know, good salaries. One woman is making six figures in New York City, but her husband is disabled. She has a son that she's taking care of, and she's making over $1,000 in student loan payments. And she's telling me they're going to garnish my Social Security if I eventually am able to retire because the payments are just so high, and the principal and the interest so high that, you know, you can't keep up unless, you know, you win the lottery or something and can pay it off all at once. You get to a certain point with this debt where that, you know, that's the case. You know, unfortunately for a lot of people, millions of Americans are dealing with this. So, you know, over 44 million Americans have, you know, student loan debt. And if you went to graduate school, you know, the amount of debt you're dealing with is going to be in the six figures.
That's crazy. It's crazy what we've done. And this is where policy has created this crisis. And policy is the only way I see us getting out of it. And I said from the beginning, the fair way to go about this is to say you took out, you know, $10,000, you got to pay $10,000 back. The federal government should be buying up these loans and saying, look, you took out 10 grand, you got to pay that back. Maybe 1% interest or a little bit of service interest. But the kind of obscene fees and interest that we've seen, this predatory system that's set up for people who just want to try and lead a decent life is well, it's ridiculous. I think it's criminal, but it's not good for our society. It's not good for a nation that needs an educated workforce.
No, not at all. I think it really incentivizes people to go into jobs where, you know, they're going to make a ton of money rather than doing something that's going to be publicly beneficial or something that might, you know, be their passion. And it might, you know, it deters people from pursuing higher education, whether you can't afford to go to college or you can't afford to go to grad school. You know, even my personal experience, my girlfriend had to take a year off to get ready to go to grad school just to have the money to be able to do that. And, you know, looking and navigating that academia area, it seems like a lot of people that are pursuing these master's degrees and PhDs are ones where their families have enough money to subsidize, their income, because you're not only you're going to take out a huge amount of debt to get that education, but you need to take out income or you're getting paid, you know, so little, maybe $20,000 a year or less to teach, to subsidize your income while, you know, conducting research or, taking classes and things like that. And it's really unfair to a lot of these people, especially a lot of these institutions that pride themselves on diversity. And it's a huge thing in higher education that people talk about, diversity and opening opportunities to lower income and more diverse background. And that's not what we're seeing. And we've seen it with studies on the racial wealth gap when it comes to student loans. Brookings did an analysis a few years ago when Black college graduates come out of their four-year program, they have, you know, over $7,000 more in debt than the typical white graduate. And then in 4 years, that gap explodes to more than $25,000 and more than triple the amount. So,
and why do they say, you know, that happens?
They said they attributed it to not only just the type of loans that they these graduates are able to take out, but the interest rates that they're able to take out. So and it goes to discrimination. The banks are the ones running these loans and funding these loans and profiting these loans. Sallie Mae is obviously the biggest well-known student loan vendor in the U.S. Those people are making tons of money off of this industry. And the people that are paying the price are the people who can afford the least to be able to attend college. And, you know, those are the people who need those opportunities the most to be able to,
we've got 745 billionaires. We need to create a couple more. And if it means we saddle the next generation with massive debt to get there, maybe by gosh, that's what we got to do. This is why I hope the younger generation is angry and voting, because policy got them into this mess. I think policy can help get us out. I think Joe Biden has got to do something. He made some campaign promises that hopefully he's able to do something on. But reality check, The Republicans are not going to allow anything to happen, which is weird because I'm sure that they know people who have student loan debt as well. It's crazy stuff. I did want to ask you another question because you've done some extensive reporting on the Starbucks, and this is a complete 180, but it's also in the economic realm. I mean, these are people who, you know, they need family-sustaining wage like anyone else. I guess Thursday we may find out how the vote's going to go. What are you hearing about Starbucks up in Buffalo?
Well, the first three stores of six stores in Buffalo filed for union elections. The first three stores that did so, their votes are expected to be tallied. And as soon as they announced publicly, Starbucks sent dozens and dozens of corporate executives to just swarm the Buffalo area, hold these really aggressive captive union audience meetings, basically spam workers with anti-union messaging. It's been, you know, really, really egregious, you know, almost similar to what we saw in Bessemer with Amazon, just renting out hotels to pull people out of work, shut down stores. They're shutting down stores to remodel the stores. What they're doing is disrupting the unionizing campaign, and they're you know, creating an atmosphere where workers can't even talk to each other. Union organizers can't talk to each other within the stores because you have one or two strange people from corporate breathing over your neck or watching every single thing you do. So just imagine how stressful and anxiety-inducing that is to always have someone looking over your shoulder, not someone you might be working with as a store manager. The workers actually told me several store managers resigned as shortly after the unionization effort was announced, and I assume that was because of just the heat that Starbucks corporate probably blamed those specific individuals for, and for, you know, the widespread problems within these stores. The workers have been talking about understaffing, having to do multiple jobs, you know, work the drive-through, make drinks, keep up with the drive-through rates, all the while, you know, customers are barking orders, you're getting orders from the digital.
And you got to deal with those damn people.
You're getting hit from all ends. So
yeah, I can't imagine. So real quick, what's your sense? I mean, is your sense that it's going to work out? They're going to vote the union in? What's your sense at this moment?
I'd be surprised if at least one store didn't win. I think Starbucks pulled some dirty tactics in expanding the members of who were eligible to vote and kind of swapped in a lot of different workers to try to sway the election results in their favor. But I think the union busting kind of imploded in their faces, especially with Howard Schultz making that ridiculous comment comparing the Holocaust.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael, I appreciate the time, man. Thanks so much. Good stuff.
Thanks.
Michael Saionato, labor journalist with The Guardian. Quick break. Right back.